Hello and welcome to History Gap. I'm Molly Goodfellow.
And I'm Georgia McAndrew. This podcast bridges the history gender gap and tells you about all the badass women from across history and culture.
This week on the podcast, we are talking about inventor of sleuths and prolific mystery writer Agatha Christie.
I must confess, I did English literature at uni. I haven't read a lot of Agatha Christie.
Have you read any Agatha Christie?
None, I don't think. She's just kind of passed me by. Wow. And I don't know what... I've seen the movies.
Okay. All right. If you've seen some, like, ITV classics, that'll do. From best-selling books that have endured the test of time to being the first woman to ever learn to surf, what an icon.
What an icon. I'm assuming you're well-read in Agatha Christie then.
Of course, I'm actually reading one of hers now.
You're such a nerd, you've brought a book.
Just to prove that I'm a med fan. I'm also listening to an Agatha Christie audiobook right now. So
look at you go. She's Agatha Christie now.
I'm Agatha Pilled. Agatha was born Agatha Mary Clarissa Miller on September 15th, 1890. She was born in Torquay down in Devon and was the youngest of three children. She had an older brother, Louis Monty, and an older sister, Margaret Frary Madge. Frary.
I like Madge.
I like Madge. Madge is cute. I don't know what Frary is. All due respect.
All due respect.
They were an upper middle class family, if you can't tell from the names. Agatha's siblings were generally a lot older than she was, and so she spent a lot of her childhood by herself. She mostly enjoyed making up imaginary games and was an avid reader. Big same.
Please, you got to tell us one of your imaginary games now.
They weren't fully imaginary, but like me and my friends in the school playground, we didn't have like a lot of toys or like equipment. So we just used to play like Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Oh my God, I loved Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
We used to have those like lunch benches with the like the wooden lunch benches, and we used to pretend that that was the like van, you know?
Yeah.
I can't remember what it's called, but they had the Buffy mobile or whatever. Big Buffy mobile,
yeah.
We used to play that.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in not a tiny school, but rural Scotland, and we just had a bin and we would just jump over it.
Is that the game?
Hop over the bin.
Oh, everyone out to the playground, we've got to hop over that bin.
It was a great childhood, actually. Yeah. God.
I think, you know, that's the thing. Children have too many toys these days, and so they don't have to...
That's true.
Invent stuff.
Like jumping over the bin. There is something like really beautiful though in like kids' imagination and just being able to create fun out of things. Like we definitely, not to be sad, but we do lose that as adults, I think.
Yeah.
Also, it would be such a slay to be like, oh yeah, I used to play childhood games with Agatha Christie. Like I imagine the games that she made were like next level.
She was like the bossy one in the playground.
Yeah, but like no one could argue with her because they were like, damn, that
this
was a plot
game's
twist
actually,
we didn't see coming.
I really need to see how this one ends.
She's like, let's do a murder mystery. And everyone's like, oh, not again.
Agatha was reading by the age of 5, and when she was 10, she'd written her first poem called The Cowslip.
There once was a little cowslip and a pretty flower too, but yet she cried and fretted all for a robe of blue. Now a merry little fairy who loved a trick to play just changed into a nightshade, that flower without delay. The silly little nightshade thought her life a dream of bliss, yet she wondered why the butterfly came not to give his kiss.
After finishing her education as a teenager and with her mother's health ailing, Agatha and her mother went to Cairo in Egypt to escape the cold British weather. While out there, Agatha was encouraged to take part in the debutante season at the Gezira Palace Hotel. This was basically where young women would be taken out into society for the first time and introduced to eligible bachelors to see if they could find boyfriends, fiancés, husbands. Around this time, she began writing what would be her first novel, Snow Upon the Desert, a book inspired by her time in Egypt. She tried to get it published but faced a lot of rejections, and an agent suggested she try a second book instead. There were definitely other women authors at this time. Think Virginia Woolf, Willa Cather. It wasn't like she was stepping into the unknown, but she was definitely trying to start off her career young. She made friends in Cairo who invited her to parties back home in Devon. And there she met a man. Sorry.
A man?
A man.
In the local area.
a hot single man in her area. And there she met men and had a few romances and proposals of marriage, but these were largely rejected until she met Reginald Lucy, or otherwise known as Reggie. He was quite a sensible boy. Reggie suggested that they be engaged for 2 years, and if in the meantime they met someone else who was richer or who Agatha perhaps liked more, they could break off the engagement with no problem. And meet someone she would.
Reggie? Quite mature.
Reggie, yeah. Like, obviously, like...
I respect it.
It feels like a very modern setup or like a modern thinking for that time.
Yeah.
Like, it feels like the sort of thing you should be able to say now, but yeah, you absolutely wouldn't be able to say without getting ripped to shreds.
Yeah, like the man would be like,
either you love me or you don't. Like, but it feels very like, it feels quite sensible for that time. Like, this is pre-World War One.
Mm.
So I wonder whether they just, I don't know, marriage was more of a contract, I suppose, at that. Like, the formalities of, like, women being put out for debutante season.
Yeah. Well, and I guess, like, an engagement was, like, a period of, like, wooing, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And I love how he's like, if you find someone hotter, yeah, if you find someone richer, fine.
If you find someone better, fine. But if not, we'll be together.
Yeah.
In 1912, Agatha attended a party at the local stately home in Exeter, as you do. And there she met Archibald Christie. I'm going to say it, this is a sexy name.
Oh, yeah.
He was an aviator who was signing up for the Royal Flying Corps, and he swept Agatha off her feet. They had a whirlwind romance, and she broke off her engagement to Reggie and became engaged to Archie.
Side note, googled this man. It wasn't just the name that was...
Is he a looker?
Oh, he's a looker.
Did she make the right choice?
He's got a jawline. He's got, like, the, like, you know how they used to, like, the greasy hair with, like, the little twist.
Curl.
Yeah. And Archie was rocking
and
that.
He, like, flew planes.
Yeah.
Which I imagine
he
is, like...
He was a pilot.
Yeah. That's very hot. Sorry, Reggie.
I think Reggie would understand.
Reggie would have been, like, fair play.
He was like, this is the criteria I gave you.
Yeah, this
was fine.
He's meeting all the requirements.
Yeah,
because
at least in Reggie's point, like, if it wasn't someone better than him, he'd be a bit like...
Yeah,
okay.
If she was leaving him for, like, a 2 out of 10.
Yeah, but not... Yeah. Not to sound shallow, but...
He probably shook Archie's hand and was like, well done, mate.
Fair play.
Well done. Soon into their romance, the First World War broke out, and both Agatha and Archie would be involved. Agatha would work as a nurse at a Red Cross hospital in Torquay, and Archie was serving in the Royal Flying Corps based in France. In December 1914, in the Christmas break of the war, the pair married. On December 27th, 1914, Archie returned to France to fight in the war and Agatha continued nursing. In 1915, Agatha's work changed. She started working in the hospital dispensary, which was basically a pharmacy. It was here that she learned all about potions. It was here that she learned all about poisons and medicines, and it was here that she started getting inspiration for her famous detective Hercule Poirot. Part of the inspiration for the character was the large amount of Belgian refugees that were welcomed to England and even settled in Torquay, where Agatha was living. And so she started writing The Mysterious Affair at Styles, a mystery novel. However, again, she sent out the manuscript to many publishers and got as many rejections as she sent out.
I really admire that she just continues writing.
Yeah.
If I had, like, one book rejected, I'd be like, oh, I'm bad. I'm never doing yeah. it again. And then the fact that the first publisher's like, will you just write another one? I'd be
just
like,
write another
how
one.
Much time do you think I have?
And, like, also getting many rejections. Mm. Like, I feel like one would be bad, but you'd be like, okay, well, like, yeah. I can take one. But then, like, the second and the third.
And the third.
And the fourth and the fifth.
Yeah.
I would have burned anything that I'd ever written.
Mm. She must have had, like, really thick skin and or just, like, knew she was actually really
yeah.
good and was just not
knew.
Being appreciated.
Yeah. By 1918, the war was over and Archie returned to England to be with his wife. The next year, he got a job in the big city and he and Agatha moved to London. In August of the same year, Agatha gave birth to her first and only child with Archie, a daughter called Rosalind. It was also the year Agatha would have her Poirot novel accepted by a publisher, the seventh one she sent the manuscript to, John Lane of the Bodley Head. He made some minor tweaks, changing the final denouement to be Poirot revealing the killer in the library rather than a courtroom, giving Poirot his signature move. In 1922, Archie was working in a new job, basically going around the world giving propaganda of Great Britain as a powerful empire. He and Agatha would embark on what they called the Grand Tour, travelling across the empire to promote an event called the Empire Exhibition, due to take place in 1924. While in Cape Town, Agatha and her husband learned to surf, and Agatha was even the first British woman to surf standing up. She had been continuing to write novels. She was absolutely prolific, churning them out one a year or more since she started. She was even writing plays too. She changed publishers, moving to a new publishing house that would one day become the famed HarperCollins. She was a busy lady.
She's definitely, like, multifaceted. She's
yeah.
very impressive. She's like, I'll work in a hospital pharmacy during the war. I'll write plays, I'll write novels, and I'll surf.
Yeah, and she seems very open to, like, experiencing all things, like Archie being like, we need to go and promote the empire, questionable. But, like...
Yeah, doesn't need promoting.
I'll come with you, but, like, I'm going to do some activities on the map.
I guess, like, I mean, her novels are quite adventurous, aren't they?
Yeah.
So I guess, like, you can kind of, that was obviously, like, something that was important to her, like, in her life, and that kind of, like, translated into her work, which is cool.
Yeah, like, in her earlier work, she took inspiration from, like, her trip to Egypt with her mother, and mm-hmm. so it was obviously quite important for her to be experiencing things mm. so that she could write.
Although, like, this whole, like, thing that Archie's doing, do you think that, obviously, like, the people who have been colonized by Great Britain are yeah. like, we know you're a powerful empire, like, we don't need an exhibition.
Like, who are they trying to sign up for this? Because it feels like people don't, like,
don't
you're not giving
it.
People a choice either.
No.
Like, you're being like, come on, become part of the empire, even
yeah.
though you probably don't.
I bet Agatha was like, can't be bothered with this, hon, I'm going surfing.
Yeah, like, you go and do your empire shit, I'm going to gain a new skill.
Mm. And I like that she's obviously clearly, like, on a roll now with her work. It's
yeah.
all getting published. It feels like she's living her best life, traveling the world with her husband.
Yeah, her very sexy husband.
It's making me feel like something's going to go wrong.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Imagine if it did.
Oh, no.
Let's continue, shall we? However.
Oh, God. I knew the however was coming.
However, in 1926, the wheels seemed to come off for Agatha a bit. In April, her mother died, and she had to face clearing out the family home while grieving, writing, and caring for her daughter. To make matters worse, her marriage to Archie was also under strain. Archie had fallen in love with another woman who was also a friend of the family, Nancy Neal, and Agatha obviously took it badly.
I know it's, like, definitely Archie's fault because he's the one with the relationship with Agatha, but, like, Nancy Neal, it's a sneaky name.
It's a very...
Nancy Eel.
Yeah, it's a name that makes me think of, you know, Meredith Blake in The Parent Trap.
Yeah.
It's very, like, sleek.
Yeah.
Nancy's quite, like, a sleek name. Mm-hmm. It's a good mistress name.
Yeah, like a nemesis name as well.
Yeah. Damn it, Archie, we all believed in you.
Mm-hmm. I thought, like, Archie, Agatha, they're living that dream, and then he has to be a pig.
He has to be a bad boy. He has to be the worst boy. This news launches Agatha into one of the more well-known periods of her life. She goes missing for 11 days. There's a lot of speculation and myth around this period of time. People try to conflate her writing and what was happening with her husband and why she went missing. They say she tried to do a sort of Gone Girl style framing of her husband being responsible for her going missing. Kind of respect it. But the truth was, she was probably just really depressed and beaten down by the breakdown of her marriage and the grief of losing her mother. One day, she had taken a train to Harrogate and checked into a hotel under a false name and sort of just had a dissociative episode that she was very private about. It gained a lot of press attention and is often something spoken about in relation to Agatha today. In 1928, Agatha and Archie were granted a divorce, and she started writing novels under a pseudonym, Mary Westmacott, where she could write more about her life experiences, which I assume was quite cathartic for her.
The way we do the script in History Gap, we've got like a little pause for convo, here's what you can talk about, and the top line just says, husband, bastard.
Husband, bastard.
It's my favourite note. We don't need to do too much discussion on this. We're not impressed with Archie.
No, I think don't have an affair. My hot take.
Yeah.
Divorce her, then go, like, move on.
I know.
You don't have
move
to.
Move on with Nancy. Take her around the empire.
You don't have to push Agatha to a breakdown.
I know. I think it's really interesting that she just went missing for 11 days. I think it's that thing where, like, you know when something's going wrong in your life and you're like, I just want to run away.
And yeah.
She just, like,
and she just did it.
She just did it.
Yeah. She just did it.
I also think people, not to bring it back to the husband, bastard, like... I always think people who, like, cheat on artists are so brave because
yeah.
I'm like, for example, like, Taylor Swift's boyfriends or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm like, you just know she's going to write an album about
yeah.
you. Why have you done this to yourself? And obviously Agatha is so articulate, a brilliant writer. I feel like any sort of, like, sleazy male character
yeah.
should be like...
She's going to murder you in every single new book that she
yeah.
writes. At a dinner party in 1928, Agatha met a couple who had recently returned from Baghdad, and she was inspired by tales of their travels. She then booked a trip on the famous Orient Express. As we all know, she wrote that book,
mm-hmm.
Murder on the Orient Express.
Seen that movie.
Seen the movie?
Seen the movie.
Good. She travelled alone, which was unusual for women at the time, and while exploring one of Iraq's archaeological sites, she met an archaeologist called Leonard Woolley and his wife Catherine, who she made great friends with. It's nice to go on holiday and make friends, I think.
It is.
Controversial opinion. A few years later, in 1930, her newfound friends invited her back to Ur, and this is where she met Max Mallowan, an archaeologist in training. He was only 25 years old. Agatha was 40 years old at this point. They fell in love, and later that year, Max proposed to Agatha back in England, and she accepted, and they married in Edinburgh.
A boy toy.
I know.
Love Agatha.
And like an archaeologist.
Yeah.
Makes me think of Brendan Fraser in The Mummy.
Yeah. That kind of like, what does he wear? He wears like the kind of open
the, like,
shirt.
Khakis.
The khaki faded
He's like
cream,
tanned.
A little bit oily, greasy.
Yeah. Slay Agatha. They went on a lavish honeymoon, travelling to Venice, what was then Yugoslavia, and Greece. He was entirely the man Agatha deserved. Agatha, of course, continued her writing and by this time had written her first full-length novel featuring Miss Marple, Murder at the Vicarage. By this point in her life, she was writing two or three books a year, as well as dabbling in writing plays. War would soon break out again and both Max and Agatha did their bit in the war effort. Max going overseas and Agatha returning to work in a hospital pharmacy. But she didn't stop writing. In fact, her adaptation of And Then There Were None made its stage debut in 1943, before the end of the war. After the war, the world of TV and film opened up for Agatha. Some say she was slightly hesitant to lend her works to this world, but due to tax problems she was facing, she was somewhat incentivized to do it. The first of her works to appear on BBC television was a previously unpublished work called The Wasp Nest, which was broadcast in 1937 and featured actor Francis L. Sullivan as Poirot. In 1947, the BBC asked her to write a radio play, and she wrote Three Blind Mice, which would then go on to become The Mousetrap, the longest-running theatre show in the West End. Agatha was the first playwright to have three plays showing at one time in the West End, when she also had Witness for the Prosecution and Spider's Web showing.
It's so impressive to have, like her imagination, her creativity to be like producing like that much work.
And so much, so many different, like to come up with so many different plots and so many different ideas of people murdering other people and different like motives and all the like interweaving stories and like had a real insight of how people work and how people's mind work and kind of the human condition of why people murder other people.
Yeah.
I'm always super interested as to why like those sorts of stories are what people find really interesting, if that makes sense. Like, why do we want to watch stories about people getting murdered?
Why is there so many true crime girlies?
Yeah, and it feels like it speaks to like a weird part of us that wonders, well, maybe I could kill someone.
I don't wonder that, actually.
Oh, no, it's not just me. Or like looks at people and it's like, why do you think that you could ever get away with that?
I know what you mean. Like, for most people, murdering is going to be unknown.
Yeah.
Like, we're never probably going to partake in that.
It's like driving past a car crash and being like, I need to look at what's going on, even if you're going to veer. Like, oh, shit.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like you just can't look away.
Can't look away. Agatha would continue working and writing into her old age, eventually dying in January 1976 at age 85. She continues to be one of the most published authors in the world and the most translated individual author. Agatha's work stands at a total of 130 publications, which breaks down into 74 novels, 66 of which are detective novels, 28 collections of short stories, 164 individual short stories, 3 poems, 16 stage plays, 7 plays for TV and radio, and 2 autobiographies. It's a lot of stuff. It's a lot of work.
It's a lot of work. It's just like, just impressive.
She must have really loved it. I think that, like, from the research I did to write the script, like, she really loved what she was doing. And there were periods of time, particularly after her mother died, when it became less of like her passion and more of, oh God, I have to keep writing because.
Got to keep like financially afloat.
Yeah, I'm about to be divorced and she had problems with tax, which slay. Not slay, but you know what I mean. Very chic. Really chic for a writer to have tax problems, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Like, she obviously really loved her work and it obviously kind of was a constant in her life. Like, she was writing from when she was 10.
Yeah. What I find, like, really impressive is, like, how, like, enduring her stories are. Like, here we are all these years later, and they're still getting, like, made into Hollywood movies by, like, big casts. They're still on the West End. Like, it's just, like, how like brilliant a storyteller she is, that she's kind of made like timeless stories.
Yeah, especially when like the ones like I've seen are very kind of capture a certain period of time, like that kind of wartime, and they all have that sort of period. But like the people in it and the like themes in it of like jealousy, like in of it, like often like a motive can be jealousy, like lovers, like spurned lovers, like blackmail,
greed,
and all of that stuff. Like
that
they're
stuff.
All kind of, yeah, they're like themes that go through generations and like through time.
Yeah.
Which are great.
And she traveled the world.
She traveled the world. She had like a really sexy bad man husband. Mm. And then she got to meet a really nice husband, which I love for her.
Yeah, a nice archaeology boy.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, she's super impressive. I feel like I'm glad we got her on the pod because I know you're a fan.
Love her.
And I just have to ask, you've read a lot of her books. If you could be like killed off by Agatha Christie, what, where and when?
Love to get a poison. Love to be poisoned. Because I think the idea that she kind of went into nursing during the war, and that's where she learned about her poisons. Would love to be poisoned. Would love for my death to be solved by Marple.
Okay, nice.
Like, I do love Poirot, but I love Marple because she's like, she's written as
girl
this
boss.
Kind of, yeah, she's girl boss, but also I think Agatha does really something really smart. She does it with Poirot and she does it with Marple, where she's written these detectives that people really underestimate.
Mm.
So like people often in the Poirot books are like, oh, you're just like this weird Belgian man, I don't really respect you, and then he'll obviously work out who the murderer is. And it's similar with Miss Marple. They underestimate her because she's like an old lady, and she often turns up and she'll be doing knitting and people are like, you don't know anything, you're an old woman. And then she's like, actually, I know everything.
Yeah.
So would love for Miss Marple to solve my untimely death.
Great. I guess, would you go for like a gracious poison though? Like, I would just want one that I would just like die peacefully in my sleep.
I
not
wanna,
like a like frothing at the mouth.
Yeah, I want to die looking very beautiful and radiant.
Mm.
And I want to have either a fiancé or a husband who is forever like mourning my loss.
Yeah.
Never remarries because he's always in a state of constant heartbreak.
Yeah.
That's the death that I, that's the Christie death that I would like.
Okay, great.
Thank you. Thanks for asking.
You're so welcome. I know you'd be dying for me to ask you that question.
<I know. laughs> You've been listening to History Gap with me, Molly Goodfellow.
And me, Georgia McAndrew. If you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to like and subscribe and review if you'd like to.
And keep an eye on our socials, at History Gap on Instagram and TikTok, at History Gap Pod on Twitter.
Okay, bye.
Bye.